Adrian Bennett and Dale Crafts, Republican candidates for Maine's 2nd District Congressional seat. Maine's primary election was postponed until July 14th because of COVID-19. Absentee voting is already underway. In addition to local races, Democrats will choose a candidate for U.S. Senate, and Republicans will choose a candidate to challenge Representative Jared Golden in the 2nd District. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Two of the three Republican candidates for the 2nd District seat will be our guests on Maine Calling today. We'll ask Adrian Bennett and Dale Crafts why they're running and what their priorities would be if elected. This is your chance to ask them about issues that matter most to you. Bennett will be our guest for the first half hour, Crafts the second. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. My guest this half hour is Adrian Bennett. She's a businesswoman and former press secretary for Governor Paul LePage, and she is running for the Republican nomination for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Adrian, thanks for joining us.
Jennifer, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and as always, we want to hear from you in the audience. This is your chance to ask the candidates questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Adrian, why are you running for Congress?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was brought up in rural Maine, and Mainers in the 2nd District, they're not looking to vote for more career politicians, you know, and we need somebody who is intimately knows the 2nd District and the values that we share as Mainers. And I don't think that there is fair representation right now. So I'm not the career politician. I wasn't tapped on the shoulder by the establishment to get into this race. But I have been intimately involved with politics for almost a decade. And coupled with my communications and media experience, I feel that I can be a great advocate for Mainers, the regular Mainers who are working hard every single day to make ends meet and make their lives better and their families' lives better. I've raised my own family. And Jennifer, I know you have a 19-year-old, a 22-year-old. I've got a 20-year-old whom I've raised with her dad. And, you know, that is one of the most proudest accomplishments that I've had. But it's, you know, I understand what it takes, you know, to do that. And when I was in my 20s, I had to work 3 jobs to make ends meet and help out and provide for the family. I carried the health care coverage. I know the struggles that can come along with that. And, you know, I also understand from my childhood what it's like to live in poverty. And you've got to have a voice to empower people to reach their potential. And I believe that I have the ability to do that for Mainers and help us get policy across the finish line that's going to lower taxes so people can keep more of their hard-earned money and reform welfare, bring more accountability to the system. You know, we have some issues with immigration right now that are at the forefront of our nation. I want to make sure we can take care of our veterans, take care of our seniors, and I'm compassionate for all people, but we really need to focus on our immediate needs here in Maine and who we need to take care of, our future children, our seniors, our veterans, and who are our most vulnerable people. And I'll be a fighter for them. I've been a fighter my entire life and underestimated.
Adrian, if elected, what's your number one priority? What's the first thing you want to get done in Washington?
Well, we need to get a Congress who is on board with moving the America First agenda forward. I think the one thing throughout this entire pandemic we've learned is that we have relied so much on China. And that has been something that has not helped us as a country. It certainly hasn't helped us here in Maine. We've had many manufacturing jobs go over to China. And we need to hold China accountable. That is one thing that will be a priority during the next session. And I have been talking to current Congresswomen about bills that are already moving forward. So we need to focus on that so we can bring some more of those jobs back here. And we need to focus on the Maine economy. We're looking at hundreds of businesses closing throughout this pandemic to no fault of their own because they've been forced to close. And so what can we do as a state and nation to help get our economy back on track? We're starting to see the bounce back and, you know, some of those jobs coming back, but there are many Maine businesses who have suffered throughout this. So we need to focus on them as well.
Adrian, speaking of immigration, I've seen you quoted as saying that many immigrants are cutting in line. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so again, it comes back to taking care of our own. And we have nursing homes that are closing in the state of Maine. And that is simply wrong. We need to take care of our veterans. We know our veteran population, that there's a very high rate of suicide. And simply put, we need to put Mainers first. And, you know, one of the focal points of President Trump's campaign, as we know, is immigration and border security. They're top concerns. And Trump's accomplishments include the rapidly declining flow of illegal aliens into the country. That's what we're talking about here. And, you know, he's ended the catch and release program, and he supported legislation to allow legal action taken by families who have had a loved one victimized by violent crime at the hands of somebody who is here illegally. So there is much that we can do in terms of looking at the immigration, the comprehensive immigration policy. But again, it comes back to Mainers. What can we do to help Mainers and use those taxpayer dollars to benefit them directly?
Adrian, in light of the death of George Floyd and others and the Black Lives Matter protests calling for change, would you work for criminal justice reform? And if so, what needs to be done?
Yeah, and I've got to say, first and foremost, Jennifer, that everybody I've spoke to believes that George Floyd's death is a tragedy. We have a national conversation going on about this. We have legislation that has been moved forward and voted on, and now there are amendments coming down at the congressional and Senate level. I believe that the Justice Act, which was originally introduced by Senator Tim Scott and by Congressman Stauber in the House, it's going to enhance professionalism in policing. It's going to increase accountability. It will help build trust in our communities and result in greater protection and service for everybody. You know, by expanding the use of body-worn cameras, for example, increasing data sharing, requiring record retention, providing additional de-escalation and cultural diversity training. These are all things that are going to help ensure our law enforcement agencies across the country and here in Maine operate at levels that meet or exceed expectations of the communities they are sworn to protect. I'll add this too. One of my first priorities coming into this campaign back in October, I put 20,000 miles on my vehicle traveling the 2nd District. It's very large, 11 counties here in Maine. I visited the sheriff's offices. I visited the local police departments. And I wanted to know the challenges specifically they're facing. We have so many people within our system right now who are dealing with substance abuse issues, drugs, mental health illness. And we need to address these issues holistically and have an approach that not only includes law enforcement, but prevention, education, treatment, and services. So we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do on that.
We'll start by going to Linda, calling from Orrington. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi. I would just like to ask you, do you and will you continue to work for Mainers in D.C. the way you are working so hard for us right now?
Well, Linda, thank you. You know, I was just recently in Orrington at Calvary Chapel, and yes, absolutely. It's something that our elected officials, sometimes when they get into their bubble, they forget about regular people. I think it was President Reagan who said that you can't be for big government, big taxes, big bureaucracy, and still be for the little guy. I am the little guy. I'm just a mom. I've been a businesswoman. I've been in communications and media as a reporter, and I've been in government for 7 years. And I happen to like policy, and I happen to love working for the people of Maine. In all of the positions I've had, I've always worked for Mainers in some way by sharing stories. Jennifer, as you know, as a reporter, it's very rewarding to be able to listen to Mainers, share their stories, and try to find solutions for them too. That's what this is about. It's about representing, making sure that you are having back and forth communication on what I'm doing in Washington, what I'm doing here in Maine, listening to your issues and solving them. I mean, that's truly what it's about. It's what I've been doing my entire life. I look forward to it. I really do, Linda. Thank you.
Linda, thanks for your call. Lisa on Facebook writes, I am concerned that you are only willing to represent those who vote for you. I say this because in your ad, you demonize liberals right off the bat. That kind of divisiveness is unprofessional and clearly states that you will not represent everyone. How will you listen to all voices in your district?
Yeah, and, you know, as an elected official, you have that responsibility to speak and act on behalf of everybody, all Mainers. And in this case, for me, it's people in the second district. We're in the primary right now, so that's very different from a general election, as many people know. But when you're representing people, you're making the best decisions in the best interest of those people. And I'll always have everybody's best interest at heart, you know, depend the issue. And ideology and, you know, some political, you know, way I feel I might be more conservative on something than somebody who's more liberal. But I truly believe that we can have a conversation. You know, we're so divisive right now as a country. We're very, very divisive as a state right now, too. In any position that I've had, communication has been key. And you have to have a willingness to talk with the other side, people with varying opinions. And I'm willing to do that. It can't be a shouting match. It can't be a venting session. It's got to be a productive, solutions-oriented conversation. And I'm certainly willing to do that with everybody.
An email for Mark. Would you work to repeal or replace the Affordable Care Act if elected?
Sure, sure. You know, this has been in play for years and years. And, you know, as we know, President Trump has been working to continue to dismantle Obamacare because it has been a disaster. It's going to continue to be an issue. Healthcare, you know, I know when I was working at Channel 5 that I carried the health insurance plan. Luckily, it was a good plan. And we had the choice, you know, if Medicare for All, which we've heard about from, well, specifically during that presidential primary, we heard about Medicare for All. And that would eliminate private health insurance. It would have eliminated so many Mainers' health insurance. And I don't believe that that's right. What President Trump is continuing, you know, to do, and the work revolves around healthcare, is expanding options, lowering drug costs, and improving accessibility of quality insurance. These are all moves in the right direction. The Trump administration additionally has increased the availability of short-term limited duration plans offered. I believe it's 60% or offering prices 60% cheaper than Obamacare plans. So, you know, we need to move into a different direction. Obamacare is, you know, something of the past. We know it didn't work, and we need to continue to work on that, improving accessibility, the quality of insurance, lowering drug costs for our seniors, and things like that.
We'll go to John, who's calling from Caribou. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling with Adrian Bennett. John, are you there? John and Caribou. Well, shoot, we'll move on then. We'll go to Joe, who's calling from Mount Vernon. Hi, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Ms. Bennett, as somebody who's not really thrilled with either party, especially in the way they help blue-collar workers nowadays, I want to know how you could be an independent voice in Washington, not like Eric Brakey, who we know, who would be an ideologic libertarian and or somebody who's going to be a flat out party line vote, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. How will you be independent and resist those pressures in the name of the little guy in Maine?
Sure, sure. Resisting pressures, lobbyists, lawyers, you know, all those people that when people are in an elected position, they tend to go into their bubble and be influenced very easily. Money, another factor. One thing in this campaign, I think that I have proven and will continue to prove, is that money, it doesn't mean everything. It doesn't. It's how hard you work and how much you're willing to really dig into the issues and work for the people of Maine, to listen to them, figure out what their problems are, and find some solutions. When I was in the governor's office, we always had to pick up the phone and find an answer. You know, it was not something that Governor LePage, you know, you couldn't go in and say, we can't do this. He would say, why? We had to find an answer, and you've got to be solutions oriented. So to not be influenced, you know, by big Washington and the swamp, I've got to fall back on my morals, my integrity, my principles. And that's how I grew up. I grew up in rural Maine. I had to work hard for every single thing that I had to get, you know, I am a realtor today, but I started out with absolutely nothing. I was on food stamps. My mom was a single mom doing the best she could. And we had food stamps. We were in Section 8 housing. And, you know, I saw that way of life. I didn't want that for my daughter. When I turned 20 and I had her and I was going to college, community college, it was NESCOM, New England School of Communications in Bangor, I said, she's not going to have that life. And so I pressed on. I worked the three jobs. I made ends meet, and we provided a better life for her as a family. And that's what I fall back on. You know, how was I raised? How did I become who I am? And I don't ever want to lose that. And Maine voters, you need to keep elected officials in check and remind them. And you do that by your vote. And I do hope to earn votes. I don't ask for votes. I want you to learn as much about me as possible. And that means personally and professionally before you make that vote on July 14th and in November.
Joe, thanks so much for your question. Mark on Facebook asks, former Governor Paul LePage, your former boss, questioned your temperament in a recent op-ed. Considering he knows you well and is still not supporting you, why should voters?
Sure. Well, it is one of the biggest compliments that I can get. And, you know, he has pressed on, and he has his candidate who he is rooting for and he has endorsed. But I know when I was Governor LePage's press secretary, that when he doubled down, he felt like he was behind. And, you know, the timing of him coming out and really putting the pressure on comes at a time when we know in the polls we're ahead. And that poll that came out was 28% for our campaign. It was 22 for Brakey and 20 for Dale Crafts, which is Paul LePage's candidate. Now, you know, obviously, Paul LePage, he's working overtime for his candidate. The thing is, my work ethic mimics a game that I'm down by 10 and there's a minute left. I'm always going to work hard. And career politicians look for endorsements. They do. They think that they are above all else, when truly it's the voters, it's Mainers. We have grassroots support in this campaign that is overwhelming. And that's what I care about. And ironically enough, that is how Paul LePage won in 2010. He worked his tail off, and he went to every small community in town. He listened to folks, and that's what I'm doing. And that is a strategy that works, and it's just one that works well for me because it feels like the right thing to do, and I'll continue doing that.
Okay, we'll go to Zafra calling from Belfast. Hi, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. Hello to the candidate as well. I'm just curious about how any woman running for national office can support President Trump after his professed history of sexual assault against women that he bragged about on hot mic, and all his repeated denigrations of women who disagree with him, and in general, just general nastiness attitude towards everybody who doesn't give him lavishing with praise.
Okay, Adrian.
You know, everybody is entitled to their opinions about our president, and he is our president of the United States of America. And I did not agree with Obama being our president, but the fact of the matter is, it's the policies that have been implemented and his America First agenda that I care about most. I don't know, you know, of some of the things that you're talking about and him, you know, continuing to, you know, praise that sort of attitude. I haven't seen that. I've worked with his team in 2016. I have met him personally, and I found him to be very down to earth. And for him to put his life on pause to bring forth, you know, what we need truly. And I know it's the Catch slogan. It is the slogan to make America great again. But I truly believe in his heart. That is what his intentions have been since day one. And yes, I have been the candidate who has stood with President Trump since day one. Like I mentioned, I worked on his campaign in 2016, and I was happy to do so. So there are, you know, many good policies that have been brought forth. And, you know, I continue to focus on that and making America great again, and that America First agenda, the Mainers First agenda. That's what counts.
Zafra, thanks for your question. We'll go to Lewiston and Ginger. Hi, Ginger. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to ask Adrian, because I'd read the governor's op-ed and then heard the commercials, and they were just saying that, you know, the other candidate is the only businessman in this race. Well, so as a businesswoman myself, and if the governor, who also in the op-ed called you a dear friend and you worked closely with him for over, you know, for all those years, how does he not know that you're a businesswoman? And so I personally find this ad and op-ed offensive as a woman, and it's, I think, misleading at best. And if they want to call it semantics, well, then that's playing a little fast and loose with the truth. And do you think they should recall this ad and this op-ed? Because clearly you are a businesswoman. And a business, so he's not the only business person in the race.
Right, right. And I agree with you, he's not. I own my own business in my 20s. It was a DJ service. I've actually talked to quite a few DJs across the state of Maine, and it's quite legitimate, you know. So, but not only that, you know, I've worked in both the private and the public sector, and I think that experience, you know, coupled with my business experience, it's really unlike any other candidate in this race. So I do believe also elected officials should take economics 101 too going into things. There are many business principles that we can apply to government. And a book I read a long time ago is that we don't make widgets. And it's trying to basically implement business practices toward government. In business, of course, you've got measurables, deliverables, and measurables. And oftentimes in government, there's equal opportunity of things, but there's not an equality of outcome like you have with business. So I would like to see more business practices implemented into government and making sure that we're receiving the outcomes that are necessary to justify taxpayers' dollars going into a variety of programs. We have to remember, government is run by what? Our money. And we need to take care of that appropriately, just like we would with a family budget. And I did that for many years with our family. You have to separate needs and wants. There's a clear difference in needs and wants. And oftentimes in government, it just seems like it's a funnel of money. And whoever gets, you know, the bill in or the amendment in with in time, it goes through. But we need to be more responsible on a national level with our budget. And yes, as I am a former businesswoman, but you know, more importantly, I think it's all of the experience coupled in the private sector and public sector that I have that is going to make me the best advocate for Mainers moving forward.
Ginger, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to Johanna in Poland. Johanna, if you could be quick, we're coming toward the end of the first half hour.
Hi. I was just wondering, candidate, thank you for sharing your experience with your childhood growing up on welfare and in Section 8 housing. I appreciate your candor there. So I'm just wondering, given your reliance on those benefits, which are so important to so many people, how do you reconcile your past and your family's reliance on those benefits with your party's stance that those benefits should be cut for so many people? Thank you.
Yeah. And so, Joanna, I really appreciate that. And I'm not a politician who's saying that we need welfare reform. And I don't understand it. I lived it. I've lived that life, as you noted, and I understand that there are loopholes, too. When I was a kid, I was told by my mother to go into Troy General Store, take the food stamps, go buy a lollipop, so she would get the cash back to get cigarettes, okay? Those are things that are need to be eliminated from the system, and we have worked toward that during the LePage administration. I'm not saying take away benefits for all. I'm saying there's a difference between a hand up and a handout, entitlement and empowerment, and we need to empower people to reach their potentials. We need to give them additional training if that's what they need. We need to give them professional development to get to the next step. We don't need to take away all of the benefits at one time. We could look at a tiered system. That's something that I've been interested in moving forward. We need to, again, I say this time and time again, have compassion and empower people to reach economic independency on their own that help, little help from taxpayer-funded programs that are helping them get to the next level. I think sometimes conservatives, Republicans, we don't come across as compassionate. But again, I'm a politician who not only wants to talk about welfare and reform the system, I've lived it. And I know that if we give the resources and services available to people and the right attitude, that they can reach economic independency.
All right. Thanks for your question, Johanna. Just about 45 seconds left. Adrian, we have an email from Nicole asking what you will do to address climate change locally and nationally.
Sure. Climate change, you know, that is something. I grew up here in Maine, and I love the outdoors. I'm an avid adventurer. I bike, I hike, I ski. I do everything in every season. The problem that I've seen from some Democrats with the ideas on the environment is that they're overly regulated, and that's something that really it binds our businesses from moving forward. And one thing here in Maine we need in our economy are good-paying jobs and, you know, our natural resources, they are precious, and we have many industries, logging, fishing, our lobstermen that revolve around our natural resources. We have to be smart, and I know that those industries have been in the past, and they have been.
Adrian, we're going to have to leave it there. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Adrian
Bennett, running to be the Republican candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. We'll be right back.
In the weather this afternoon, very sticky with showers and thunder, fewest near coast, most in the mountains in the north, and ending in the west and south later on. 70s for most, coolest down east, and low 80s in the west and south of Portland. Then tonight, storms end in the east and clearing for all and drier as well, and coastal fog east of Booth Bay. Coming up tomorrow, partly sunny in the northern half of the state with an isolated afternoon shower possible, and partly cloudy for the remainder, drier for all. 73 in the north to 83 interior south.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
I love Maine. Maine's a great place. I was born in Maine. I was born in Waterville, Maine. Grew up here in a handful of spots in the state. And I left, like many Mainers do. I left the state, traveled out to Wyoming, to Jackson Hole, out to the middle of the ocean, to the tropics, and back. And I found nowhere to be like Maine. Maine's a special place. The people here are amazing. Life here runs at its own pace. It's unique. It's unlike anywhere else I've found in my travels. My name's Seamus. I live in Falmouth these days, but I lived all over the state. I love Maine, and this is my Maine.
This Is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to MainePublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
The daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus now has a new three-day-a-week schedule, regularly meeting on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On these 3 days, it will normally happen at 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is now normally scheduled for 2 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, and Friday afternoons and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page. Your Vote 2020 programming is made possible by your support and by AARP Maine, advocating on the issues that matter to Mainers over 50 and their families. aarp.org/me. The Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, Maine lawyers committed to working for Maine people since 1974. Learn more at joebornstein.com. And MEMIC, with a mission to improve workforce safety and injury management, and a goal of sending millions back to the Maine economy.
For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. My guest this half hour is Dale Crafts. He's a former member of the Maine House of Representatives, and he's running for the Republican nomination for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Dale, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jennifer. I really appreciate it.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. If you have a question for Dale Crafts, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Dale, why are you running for Congress?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story, and it's an American dream story. It really is. I grew up here in Lisbon Falls. I went to Lisbon High School, graduated from there, and got married that fall and bought my first home that fall. And so my life went on and worked for my father, which is a local business that's been here for nearly 70 years, and learned how to as a mechanic and as a body man and as a recon guy, and then went on to graduate to a automobile purchaser in Florida and around the country. And shortly after that, I was traveling down the road on my motorcycle, working for my dad, and headed to my work with a pot on the back of my motorcycle, and somebody turned in front of me, drove me off the road. And when that happened, the next thing I know, I was waking up on the front lawn of someone's yard, and realized that I couldn't get up, and I was paralyzed from the chest down. Went off to the hospital to find out I would be a paraplegic the rest of my life. But because of the wonderful family that I've had and the wonderful upbringing and so many people that surrounded me and loved me and prayed for me, we got through 3 months of rehab in the hospital, and also learned that at the time I had one daughter, my oldest daughter, Barbie Lee. They informed me that I wouldn't be able to have any more children. But I can say and report today, which I'm the most proud of, is I have 6 children and 14 grandchildren. So we overcome that situation, and I'm so blessed with that. But, you know, I had a grandmother that was a very godly Christian woman that she I knew right where to go after I got out of rehab, went to her, and she was a lady that was very compassionate and taught me so much and taught me to be an overcomer, told me that I could move forward in my wheelchair and have a successful life. And so I went on to start multiple businesses and to raise a wonderful family and to get recruited in my local town politics. And a lot of times I've been called a politician. Well, I can tell you that I've been a recruited person. People have seen my successes and recruited me to run for office, just like former Governor Paul LePage. When I termed out four terms in the Maine State Legislature, I was back taking care of my family and working my businesses, and I got a call from him. And he called, and he said, "Dale, we really think you need to run for Congress." Well, he goes, "I'm friends with Eric and Adrian. They're great people. But we think that you're the guy that could actually win the general election against Jared Golden." So that is why I got recruited, not looking to be a lifetime politician in any way, but looking to serve my state and my country, because I've had the American dream. And when you have this many grandchildren and children, you know, I want to do all I can to keep that American dream going. You know, there's a lot of division in this country, and people need to sit down and talk. I am a negotiator. I have the ability to persuade. I did that when I was in the legislature, when I worked with my colleagues, when it came to bills and different legislation and in budgets. I have that ability from all the business experience and deal-making I've done all my life. So that's really why I'm running, and that's my story, and I'm very excited. I think we have a real serious momentum going right now, and I think that I am the guy to win this November and win the seat back.
Dale, if elected, what's your number one priority? What issue will you be pushing for first?
Well, if you look at what's happened to our country with the coronavirus, and it's pretty slowed the economy down, and you know, people that have good paying jobs have successful lives in so many ways. They can pay their bills, they can buy a home, they can raise a family, they can send the kids off to college or to trade school. And so I really want to get down there with my business experience and work alongside businessman President Trump and get this economy up and going. I think it's the first and foremost thing we need to do. You know, this country is very generous to other countries, and it's very generous to people that are needy, and we need to have the revenue to come in to be able to continue to help people. So it's number one priority to get this economy back up and rolling and create better paying jobs.
Dale, there's a national conversation going on about criminal justice reform. Do you believe it's necessary? And if so, what needs to happen?
Well, I think reform is always necessary. You can always reinvent the wheel. You can always do a better job. That's what we do in business. You know, as the economy shifts and your competitors come along, and you got to stay ahead of the curve. So I know that there's always room for improvement. You know, our culture changes, things change, and there's always room. So I so heartily support law enforcement. I know that I had an incident years ago that somebody in law enforcement didn't use me that well, and I went to his advisor, and he asked me the gentleman's name. And I told him, he goes, well, you know, Dale, he goes, I have a lot of people who work for me. There's always a few bad apples, but there's a few bad apples in any industry or any career. There's always some that are troublesome. So we need to really be able to recognize that. I know with this the death of George Floyd, that guy had a lot of complaints, and unfortunately he continued to work, and I think that needs to improve, that we need to really take people that have a record, either get the right training or they need to be fired. So yes, there's definitely room for improvement. There always is.
All right. We'll start with the calls. We'll go to David, who's calling from Bucksport. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call, and I always want to thank a candidate who's willing to put themselves out on the public stump. I have a question regarding your history in the Maine legislature. You were there, I believe, to vote on some crucial bills for the lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual community in Maine, and that was when we were initially getting our non-discrimination law passed at the state level, and then later same-sex marriage. What was your position when you took those votes? Did you vote for or against? And then my follow-up question would be, in light of the Supreme Court's ruling last week that LGBTQ individuals are now protected from discrimination in the workplace, what's your position on that ruling from the Supreme Court, please?
Well, listen, I did vote in the legislature. I've always voted traditional marriage has been my position just because I was brought up that way. But you know what? We have the law of the land, and it's there. And I don't ever want to discriminate against anybody as a businessman. You know, I have friends that I do business with, friends that are just friends. And you know what? They are my friends. We're all human beings, and we all have our lives to live. And I always support that. Now, as far as the ruling of the Supreme Court, nobody should be discriminated in a workforce for them type of reasons. It should be legitimate reasons on whether the work performance or whatever it is, that's my position. And we cannot choose between race or gender on who works or whether they work for us or not work for us. So my position is we don't discriminate in that way in the workforce. I haven't done it. I wouldn't do it. And I support that statement.
All right, David, thank you for your call. I'm going to go to a voicemail that came in before the program started.
Hi, this is Mark from Lewiston. I would like to ask Dale Kraps what his understanding of the separation of church and state is and if he would support the reinstatement of prayer in schools. Thank you.
Yes, I think the position is that our founders intended that it's the government's job to stay out of the church's business. I wholeheartedly believe that. I think that prayer is always it's been a big part of my life. Part of my success is because of prayer. I think that prayer helps anybody that's having prayer and is looking for help, or that the positive thoughts of prayer is beneficial for public school. And I wholeheartedly support returning public prayer to schools.
We have an email from Carl. Americans pay the highest prescription drug prices in the world. Maine has been a leader in reducing prescription costs for Mainers, but the rest of the country is not as fortunate. If elected, how will you cut prescription drug prices for all Americans?
Well, for one thing, we have over 60 million people on Medicare that the government provides some of the prescription drug, but all other developing countries negotiate with the pharmaceuticals, except for the U.S. does not negotiate. That's why when people say they can go to Canada and buy prescription drugs, or the prices in Canada are for less money. So I'm a free market capitalist, and I believe that competition brings prices down. And we ought to be able to purchase our drugs wherever the lowest price is, as long as it's the right laws are in place and they're safe drugs and the regulations behind them. So we need to continue to open up, have competition, and do the very best to have quality drugs at affordable price. And I believe it can be done.
All right, let's see here. We'll go to Diego, who's calling from Holden. Hi, Diego. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
All right. Well, I was going to ask you, so across the country, millions have lost their health care because our for-profit system ties health care to employment. How are you going to ensure that working people in Maine and across the country have access to health care in the middle of a pandemic and after?
Well, the best way you can do that is to grow the economy and have business be successful and offer health insurance to the employees. So a strong economy, a free market system will help that to happen. You know, I have employees. I offer some health care to my employees. And so if businesses can prosper and be successful, they can offer that. I'm not a person that is for government health care. I think that the best thing you can do, again, being a free market person, is to compete with other health care. Doctors need to compete for the customer. I had an incident. Somebody came to me yesterday. It's actually a relative of mine who had to get some blood work done. They went to get their blood work done. They said, do you realize the price of this? They didn't have insurance. It was $1,700 for the blood work that they needed. She said, well, I can't afford that. So they told her, and said, well, I ain't supposed to tell you this, but if you go online to this site, this other company, it'll be much cheaper. She went to the online to the site. She applied. They had a sale going. She actually got more blood work done for $500. Actually, it was a little bit under $500, from $1,700 to $500. And this is what I'm talking about. Prices need to be out there with hospitals, doctors, so that people can actually look up and see what the rating is for that doctor or that particular procedure and compete over it and get the best price. The transparency has not been there. And when I was in Maine as legislature, we had two insurance companies here in Maine. That's the only two choices you had, and we could not buy any insurance over property, over state lines, and we should be able to buy it anywhere that's available so people can compete to bring the quality up and the price down.
Diego, thanks so much for your call. That's Diego from Holden. Mike is calling in from Fairfield. Mike, you're on Maine Calling with Dale Crafts.
Hi, my question centers around Dale's early adulthood, specifically from the ages of 18 to 23. Around that time, your biography says you worked at BIW, but then suddenly you didn't, and this was years before your accident. You also talk about in your church online having backslid or backsliding, which usually means there were some concerns there. My question essentially is, from the ages of 18 to 23, have you had problems with alcohol? Have you been arrested? What concerns should we know about before we vote? The other candidates in this race have been very transparent about any concerns, yet you have not. Thanks.
Well, listen, I have a life that is people watched. And was I a drinker between at the age of 18 and in that age? Yes. Was I a heavy drinker? No. Have I ever had a problem with alcohol or drugs? No. I worked at BIW. I was there for two and a half years. I had worked for my dad before that and for myself, basically, because I was actually doing business, buying and selling cars and whatever I could, even as a teenager, because I was taught that. So when I left BIW, it's because I wanted to go back out, work for my dad, help grow his business, and go into business for myself, and that's exactly what I did. But I learned a lot from down there. I don't have any background of abuse in any way.
Mike, thanks for your call. We'll go to, let's see here. Leonard is calling from Cumberland County. Hi, Leonard. Go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Mr. Krauss, one thing that's quite distressing for me is regardless of the political party candidate, there's virtually no discussion of foreign policy. And one issue that disturbs me for a long time is that the U.S. gives billions of dollars to Israel for armaments and in cash, and yet they continue an apartheid conditions for the Palestinians. I mean, Israel is a nuclear power. Palestinians have no military whatsoever, but they punish them, you know, on a regular basis with, bombs and, you know, aerial raids.
Sure,
and we'll
ask.
Like that.
Yeah, we'll ask Dale Krafts. Dale, are you a supporter of American policy toward Israel? Would you like to see a change in policy toward the Middle East?
Listen, I am pro-Israel. I don't agree with this gentleman's statements. I think it's just the opposite. They're the only free market over there. They have elections. There's Arabs that live. There's over a million Arabs that live in Israel. There's all kinds of different nationalities that live there. They have a free society. They're surrounded by their enemies. The Palestinian Authority, actually, the money that they do get, it doesn't get to the people. That's why they're poor and suffering. And I think that we need to continue to help Israel. They're a power over there that keeps stability to the Middle East, the only power that does. And I wholeheartedly support Israel and America standing with them.
I'll ask a follow-up to Leonard's question, Dale, and that is, generally speaking, foreign policy, are there positions that you believe that not only the Trump administration but Obama administration, are there positions you've disagreed with, things you think we would have done differently, and what would you like to see going forward? I'm thinking about Yemen, about Syria, and also about nuclear weapons.
Yes, well, because we know that President Trump was very concerned about Iran, which they are the terrorists in the region. They're supplying the military to Syria, Lebanon. Some of the stuff's coming through Iraq. Certainly, it's all to attack Israel. And, we had Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all that stuff that was going on. And a good thing that Israel and America were over there dealing with that, because it would have spread to our homeland and around the world. So I agree with that policy. Now, sometimes I think that, we do have to take care of our own. We have to pay our own bills. I think sometimes we give a lot of money away around the world. And I think I would take a really hard look at that to make sure that we're spending our dollars wisely, the tax dollars, and that we don't continue to increase the debt that America has, especially now that we've had to bail out a lot of businesses to keep our economy going. We've created more national debt, so we have to really sharpen our pencil on where we spend our money. The
Leonard,
other foreign policy thing that I have that concerns me is my opponent, Eric Brakey, who's a libertarian more than he's a Republican, and he's a friend of mine, but we disagree totally on this. Eric believes that we should shut down every military base outside the U.S. and bring all the troops home. And I say if that happens, the world economy would collapse. China, Russia, Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda would raise their ugly head, and Israel would probably be attacked instantly.
Leonard, thank you for your question. Tom sends an email. You say your number one priority is restarting the economy. Can you list three specific things you would do and why they'd work?
Well, for number one, we've seen when I served in the legislature alongside Governor Paul LePage, that we pushed very hard was for the largest tax cut in Maine's history. We took over 70,000 people off the tax rolls altogether. I believe in less regulation, less taxes will stimulate the economy and cause it to flourish. We saw that way back with the first. I'm the only candidate in the race that was a Republican from day one. I registered as Republican when I graduated my senior year. I voted for Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan reduced the tax rate. He moved it down extreme lower rate, and the economy boomed like the world had never seen. It actually brought everybody's standard of living up around all around the world and America in a pace that nobody had ever seen. So it's been proven over and over, less taxes, less regulation is going to bring the economy back roaring. And so that's what I support.
An email from Cliff. You're a supporter of President Trump. President Trump believes the coronavirus will just fade away. He does not wear a mask while in public. Cases are increasing nationwide. How do you square the president's behavior with reality?
Well, listen, this pandemic is unfortunate. It's something that we weren't prepared for. I think that everybody is learning exactly how to deal with it and what it actually is and how to treat it and how to protect ourselves. If you remember over the news, when this first hit, we were told, do not wear a mask. Then we were told to wear a mask. Then I was told that the World Health Organization, I saw a report that came out and said, if you wear a mask, you'll get sicker from wearing a mask. So there's a lot of controversy on whether you should be wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. Now, I think that people with health conditions, elderly people, should be very cautious and be very careful where they go. And people ought to be very comfortable whether they can wear a mask or not wear a mask. And I leave it up to the freedoms that we have as a society. I think the government's position is to educate us on the risk of the pandemic, the coronavirus, how to treat ourselves, how to protect ourselves, and then let adult free people decide on how they want to approach it.
All right, we'll go to Sarah, who's calling from New Canada, Maine. Hi, Sarah, go ahead.
Hi there, and thank you, Dale, for taking questions today. I'm wondering how you'll work for Mainers who are on the other side of the aisle that have been frightened or angered by the current administration, and how we make sure that our voices get heard, too.
The anger of the of people that are upset with the administration now, you mean?
Right.
Well, I being a businessman and talking to a lot of business people, I had over 110 businesses contact me about reopening Maine. And I think that the approach with that was not handled in the best way. And I think that Governor Mills' sincerity was probably sincere. I think that she should have surrounded herself with more people, with more advice, and surrounded herself with the legislature, because we do have a three-branch of government. And when you give all the powers to the governor, you've eliminated two branches of government. I don't think that's good for government, and I think that was part of the problems that we were having. We do need to all come back together. We all need to do our best to get this economy up and going in the state of Maine and open up the economy and get jobs going, bring our tourists back in, have our safeguards in place, and allow people to make a living. And I think that the best thing that we can do to turn around the bad apples or the division we have is to open the economy up and allow people to be free people and allow people to provide for their family and run their businesses. This is what we got to do to heal the state of Maine.
All right, Sarah, thanks for your question. Just a couple minutes left. Larry calling from Bangor. Larry, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
I'll try to be. I'm not going to ask the question I said I was going to ask. I'm going to ask something else. I listen to MPBM. I listen to the BBC. I believe it was on the 24th of January. I heard a story about China, and I immediately went out and bought myself some N95 masks. Obviously, President doesn't listen to anybody but who he wants to listen to. How are you going to listen to anybody besides just what Donnie wants you to hear?
Well, absolutely. I have had to do that being in business all my life, and I'm a great listener. You have to sit down and listen to all the facts and the science, and you find that the science is all over the place. So I have found out that I have to listen a lot, because you hear one thing, the next day it's different. So if you got to do your homework, you got to sit down and listen to the professionals. I mean, we have doctors, we have scientists, and absolutely, I've done that, and I'll continue to do that.
Larry, thanks for your question. Just a little bit of time left, and Dale, let me ask you this. You've made it clear that you're a supporter of President Trump. Are there any policies of his that you disagree with him on?
Well, you know, I like President Trump, and I think that his whole plan is to grow the economy so we could reduce the national debt and a budget deficit. I am a fiscal hawk. Being a businessman, I have to, have a bottom line, and I would want to make sure that we would continue to look at the efficiency of the government and try to run as much tight a ship as we can, like we do we have to in business, so that we can balance the budget and reduce the federal debt. And I think that his plan with the China thing going on, that we bring all these factories and bring these businesses back home in the long term, would probably do that.
Mm. So, and looking at the long-term deficit, you still support the tax cuts, even though they raised the deficit?
Well, no, actually, tax cuts bring in more revenue. That it depends on what you do with the revenue. Now, if you're going to spend the revenue and not reduce the debt, that's one thing. But it's a proven fact with Ronald Reagan, Governor Paul LePage, when you reduce taxes, you create more revenue, and with that revenue, you can reduce the debt.
All right. Well, Dale Crafts, thank you so much for spending a half an hour with us. Dale Crafts is a Republican. He's running for the nomination for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 7 this evening. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.